You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The 2026 legislative session in South Dakota might be far on the horizon, but our legislature is convening in Pierre this month. There's a special session scheduled for September 23rd to vote on the new South Dakota men's prison. I'm sure you know it is a hot-button issue. We're going to turn to our Dakota political junkies for their analysis into the mechanics of a special session in general. And then afterwards, we'll give you an update on a few things that transpired over the long holiday weekend. Republican Jean Hunhoff is a former South Dakota state senator. Democrat Linda Duba is a former South Dakota state representative.
So we already have the framework for the prison. Now it is up to individuals who are on that task force to go forth and literally sell that to the caucus. So I know there was some reluctance on the part of some of the House and House leaders, not so much the Senate, but the House leaders on what we arrived at. Everyone agreed it was a unanimous decision what we voted on. So it'll be interesting to see what work has occurred now. And now that we've gotten, Jean, you may know this. I think I mentioned it to you last week when we talked. J.D. Dunn and Henry Carlson have come back and said, yes, we can build a 1,500-bed facility on the property north of town where that
plant was
supposed to be.
North of Sioux Falls.
So we can use the land. Mm-hmm. We can build the facility. We're going to get the high-quality 100-year promise that we made. What we are going to have to do is cut down on some recreation space, some education space, some religious space. I don't know the actual square footage, but in order to meet that 1,500, this is what we had to do. We lost a little bit of that. We're getting basically what we need to move forward. We're going to get some of the money that we invested in the Lincoln County piece. We'll get some of that back, so that's got to help. Here's what will happen. We'll take a look at what's in the prison fund. We'll understand. We don't have to write a check for the entire amount today. People need to get that through their heads. We have a fund. It's going to grow. It's in a trust fund. So we pay as we go. That's how it works. It's a guaranteed maximum price, so we're not going to exceed that. So we know that. So you sell that. You sell why is it advantageous to be so close to where we're at. We'll be able to keep our workforce. Recruiting will be better. You know, all of these things. These discussions should be happening now. Okay. And we should be talking to the people who voted against it during the session. The people who were for it are probably not going to change their minds. They're going to be for it. So it's those 36 members of the House. That's where the focus is. You don't want to be there all day, but you will have some holdouts. We still have groups of individuals out there who believe that we can magically transform the current facility. I don't know what they're thinking. And that we should be focusing our efforts on reducing recidivism. We need the bricks and mortar to move forward. So that's the focus. We can't get bogged down with all of the other ancillary things that come to mind. When you come in that morning, both groups, both parties will go straight to caucus. They'll have a discussion. They'll come down on the floor. That should be done within one vote, but it may not be.
Senator Hunhoff, two questions. One is, what would you add to what Representative Duba just said? And the second is, what do the holdouts want? Do they want something? Are they holding out for a reason? Or are they holding out because they're going to vote no? Or is there a bargaining part there? Like, I'll hold out until this happens. Help us understand those two things.
I wish I had the crystal ball that I could give you the answer. You know, I think that Representative Duba went through the process correctly. I think there might be some more back discussions when the caucuses do meet, some prior work that's going to be done by the leadership from both of the houses to see if they can bring the people to the table so that when they walk into that caucus, they have a better idea of, can they come together? And I think they're going to have to strategize for that. And I think Representative Duba in her comments said, you know, the committee voted on this and now they should be unanimous on that. You know, there's some homework that's going to have to be done before. And it's going on right now. There's no doubt in my mind. So that in a sense, they've gone through the steps. They've reconsulted. They've done everything. They've got the bid down to what they wanted. They're getting the 1,500 beds. So, you know, when you go through that process and you walk into your caucuses and you still have some opposition there, I think that's going to be the challenge as to how they bring those people to the table. Now, you said the second question was, you know, what are the opponents? You know, I don't know what the opponents are looking at, other than what Representative Duba said, looking at the current location and what you can do. I think that was thoroughly vetted in both those consultations or consultant reports that that facility is not sustainable. That is not meet the needs. There's too many problems there. It needs to come down. And I think the big issue that Representative Duba mentioned is stay the focus on the building, because there's another sidebar here, and that's the ancillaries, and that's everything that's going to be required to support what this committee is saying to reduce recidivism, because that is not going to be the current structure, organizational structure, and the staffing that they have for that facility currently. And there's going to have to be some different thought processes on how we prepare these inmates for exit back into the private sector and what kind of services we're going to need to provide them. So what my concern is that doesn't get brought into this discussion. The session is for the prison construction. Stay focused on that. But those that are naysayers will have some other things to bring in there, and they'll try to deviate. So it'll have to be a strong leadership that says, no, we're here to talk about this, and let's stay focused on that.
And one of the things comes to mind already when you talk about the recreation space, the educational spaces, and the religious spaces. We certainly did some coverage on the original plan and whether or not it had a chapel. And that was a big touch point for people, whether or not there was appropriate designated religious spaces for people who were incarcerated. But if I understand Jean right, Linda, strong leadership is going to say, we're going to deal with that later. Is something like a religious space in a chapel part of the construction thing, or is it part of the recidivism conversation?
It's both, because it is part of the construction. You can't build a new facility, without programming space, without, you know, education space, and without religious space. You cannot. If all we're going to do is go put them in cells, it's ridiculous. So that is part of the conversation, but we will still have much more space available than we have in the current facility. And the more important focus, and again, if we're trying to sell this to the people who are really squishy about it, we can talk about the technology and the much better line of sight that we will have for those inmates who will be in the prison, and so it'll be a safer environment, it'll be easier to maintain. I mean, all of the above. That goes with the physical plant. And we can stress the fact that we will have more space. But we do not want to get bogged down with the costs of what it will cost to staff that. There's another summer study that's working on that right now.
Okay. So this special session on September 23rd, focus on the building, focus on the brick and mortar, make those decisions, and
yes,
then get to the next phase.
That's right.
We recorded this conversation before the long weekend. You heard Hunhoff say she wished she had a crystal ball to foresee what the holdouts might want going into the session. That crystal ball gained some clarity. 20 representatives sent a press release over Labor Day weekend. They said they didn't have faith in the current leadership of the Department of Corrections. On Tuesday, Secretary Kelly Wasco said she will resign. There's more to this conversation. It's coming up after the break. You're on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's get back to our extended Dakota Political Junkies conversation today. We'll jump back in to discuss how national economic trends impact South Dakota's financial future. Our junkies are former state legislators Jean Hunhoff and Linda Duba. Hunhoff served in the Senate as a Republican. Duba served in the House as a Democrat. What economic indicators do you start paying attention to when you're thinking, okay, this is going to affect appropriations, this is going to affect the budget? Because we ask this question a lot, and most of the answers we get are, we'll find out, or like, wait and see. And that feels a little, to use Linda's word, squishy to me as a journalist. So Jean Hunhoff, tell us a little bit about some of the national indicators or some of those markers that you think of that you know, hey, this is going to affect state budget next year, 3 months from now, immediately?
Well, I have to tell you is that I look at our revenue sources and what's happening to them, and we see what sales tax, what's happening in that arena, that we're not meeting our projections. So that tells me people are not spending like they were before, or they're not coming to our state. So then I look at what inflation is doing. I look at also, I've been listening to and reading about the housing market, and that would be contractors' excise tax. They said that, you know, this generation, this morning I was listening to a report, and it said that, you know, people are expecting they have their dream job by the time they're 29. They're able to get purchase a home at 30, and they've got their retirement well started by age 35. I think I look at South Dakota and I think, I don't think that's probably quite accurate that we see here in South Dakota. Because if you look at new housing starts, and I look in my own community, I think that's where I always start. You know, we certainly had a shortage. We now have a lot of apartment buildings that are going up, and we have a lot of homes. And the thing that I'm seeing, and I have two have recently been in the development, which is a newer one, and it's probably 30 years old now. Their houses are very nice. They're coming up for sale, and they're not selling. They're sitting here. And so that's telling me, okay, we've got all these apartments. People are coming there. What's happening to the houses that they're in? So globally, I look at what that inflation is doing. I look at national markets as what they're doing. And South Dakota, number one in ag, I follow the ag prices. I'm seeing what the crops, what the production, you know, we know that with beef, we don't have the herds to do the supplies, because back when we had tough times, they made the herd smaller, and they're just starting to come back up. But you've got to have a price, and you have to have a market, and you've got the tariffs. So, you know, it's not just one single indicator that I look at. I look at a broad spectrum for the national economy and listen, and then I look at my own South Dakota and see what's going on.
Yeah. Linda, what would you add to that?
So being a former worked at Citibank financial services person, we also need to look at debt. So what are people's debt versus savings rates? So if our savings are going down and those credit card balances are being built, that tells us a lot about people are having to revolve debt to pay for essentials, for food, for gas, you know, possibly for rent. So those things are important. We continually hear about interest rates. Now, we do pay attention to the Fed, and the Fed is being driven by inflation and by the jobs market. So if we're seeing the jobs market be soft and we're seeing inflation climbing, you know, it's a very fine line that the Fed walks in terms of where should that interest rate be? Because if they drop it too soon or too much, we could trigger even higher inflation, which again, then bankruptcies are also up. And I, you know, again, I look locally like Gene does, but I also look nationally. And when your bankruptcies are rising, and they're saying our bankruptcies are as high as they were during COVID, then that is not a good indicator for us. Obviously, our budgets are primarily driven by sales tax and contractors' excise tax. But all the other factors that Gene listed and I talked to also drive whether people feel good enough to go out and spend.
Yeah. What about tourism? As you mentioned, this idea of, you know, people aren't, if the revenue shows that maybe not as many people are coming here and spending money. Is that the number? I don't know. I haven't looked at our tourism numbers. It could be the best year we've ever had.
But I don't think that's true, but okay. I haven't. Yeah. Gene, have you talked to anyone in the tourism
The only
office?
Thing I saw, no, I haven't, but I've just been reading. Again, they said Sturgis was exceeding, you know, and you and I had a conversation because I was out there working the first aid station, and I said, to me, it seemed like attendance was low, but according to the numbers, that was not the case. But I was going to say the other thing, if you're looking at thinking about that, look at the summer studies that are going on this summer and the headlines in the media of recent activities and really focused on energy in South Dakota. You know, I think that's going to be a big topic, and that is a big topic for economic development. I see where that Turner County decided to put a moratorium on wind energy. That impacts Yankton County. I also saw about up north, they're trying to do some plants up there. And then there's some discussion about nuclear plants and, you know, certainly with the data centers that we're talking about, production and that, you know, those are all factors in our state that are looking at what is impacting economic development. You know, certainly you've got to have some options out there, and you've got to be in the market to recruit, to get the businesses that we need here. Not a lot of attention that I've seen lately about business. And I don't know, in Sioux Falls, you know, I haven't been keeping up to track what new businesses are starting up there. You know, we've done a person here in the community has redeveloped our mall here in Yankton. And they did it by getting some tax abatement or some delay in taxes twice now to help fund bringing in, and they have three new businesses here, and certainly the parking lot is full. And, you know, that's one of the newest initiatives down here in this community. Again, but you don't hear a lot about that, but that's really the basis, what we're doing with business and with ag for supporting them for their expansion, other opportunities that are out there. And again, going back to the data centers, certainly we've invested heavily in Dakota State University, in the USD and SDSU, in providing programming and looking for the future to keep our youth in South Dakota. So, you know, I guess when you talk about economic development, it's not an isolated thing, but these summer studies and various topics, the property tax, the operational efficiency, you know, those groups are looking at basically what is needed in South Dakota in the end run by these activities of these committees.
We need more revenue, and but we need different sources of revenue.
Data centers, nuclear. Yeah. What are your thoughts on some of those as a future of economic development? I think the people of South Dakota are not afraid to say we don't want this in our backyard, for sure. So economic development is nuanced.
Yes, it is.
Nuclear and data centers are something people are definitely going to show up for and say, is this the right county for it?
Well, is it or isn't it? You know, nuclear energy is cheaper than other forms of energy, and it's extremely efficient. Now, data centers are a hot button with people because they use a high amount of energy and water. And water is important in this state, as we know. And we've invested in our infrastructure $600 million. But, you know, if you want to bring more people, more tax dollars, you've got to do something different. I am not opposed to it, but I have a forward-thinking business mindset. But I know that there are a lot of folks that say, we have enough people here, and we don't want to be sharing. So it's going to be – it'll be a real interesting discussion, and I think that's going to drive the governor's race. I'm going to be honest with you. I think that that's going to be a hot talking point.
Yeah. Economic development driving the governor's race. Jean, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, just what Linda talked about, you know, water, you know, certainly now with Lewis and Clark here on the eastern end of the state, it took them a long time, and they were passionate, and they continued. And, you know, we were able to get set up and get water in the rural areas and in the cities that needed. And we saw results of that. We saw growth in industry in those communities. That same issue is facing West River.
Yes.
And, you know, that is going to be a topic out there because those aquifers are getting low. They need to have another source. You need to have water out there. You know, I think they're going to see that they're going to have those same challenges. And are we willing to support that endeavor? Because they do need water. There's no doubt about that. Really, water is basic. That's one of the basic things of Maslow's hierarchies of needs, and you need it. And so we may have to start investing in infrastructure and looking at West River to, you know, bring them up to speed so that, again, there's equity and gives them the opportunity for economic development, more resources out there.
Yeah. And then, you know, Senator Duhamel has been the champion of that for West River, and it has been a heavy lift, a heavy lift to even conduct a study or take a look at what the impacts are. But West River definitely needs more water. So we've got to begin. We can't sleep on that. That's important.
Yeah.
And that is our visioning, you know, what our future is out there.
Yes.
Do you have time to vision? I mean, like,
we should.
That's the summer studies, right? That's the summer studies. That's certainly.
That's the summer studies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's visioning for what the future, and then you bring that for policy discussion. Absolutely.
Yeah. And sometimes, you see, I'm not a big fan of, this is our fourth out of 5 years that we've done tax studies. You know what that tells me? We need an oversight committee that is all-encompassing and not just legislative, that we should be looking at our taxes our revenues and our expenses ongoing and making decisions ongoing. If we're going to think we're going to do this one and done, that's not right. That is not visioning. That is not forward thinking. And so I've been trying to convince the powers that be that you need to do this ongoing, and we'll see what they think.
All right, one more thing before I let you go. We are recording this a few days ahead of schedule because the holiday is coming up, so people will actually hear it after the Labor Day holiday. So a few things might change about this, but we're watching. I think most people listening to the show know by now that In the Moment is not going to be here. I've been given my notification to be laid off along with my team of producers. And so October 31st, at this point, is our last day as employees here at SDPB. During that process of rescinding funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, U.S. Senator Mike Rounds had made kind of a handshake deal with the administration to get some block funding for tribal radio stations. And now we're hearing that nobody really knows if that money is coming from where it comes and when it comes, and stations are having a hard time planning because the clock is ticking to October 1st. What should we be watching for in the days ahead? Linda Duba, we'll start with you, and we'll wrap up with Jean Hanha.
Yeah, I just read that article yesterday, and I was disheartened by it. So what Senator Rounds did is he had a handshake agreement, but it was not in the bill that they voted on. So as a result of that, they don't have funding, and so now they have to go pull it from somewhere else. Well, where is that somewhere else? And what's the downstream impact if we're looking in Group B for the money for Group A? I mean, that's nobody wants to give up their funding or their grants. So this affects more than South Dakota. This definitely affects South Dakota. The tribal leaders in South Dakota said they haven't had those discussions or those talks. It is August 28th. I'm concerned for them. And other states like Alaska, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Arkansas, they're all affected too. I think what I'm going to be looking for is for Senator Rounds and other senators in those states, Senator Murkowski from Alaska, what's their next move now to procure that funding? They made that promise, and that bill passed as a result of that promise. Mm-hmm. Now they have to come through.
Jean Hanhoff, anything you would add about the future of public broadcasting and tribal public broadcasting in the future?
No, I would have to agree with Representative Duba as far as the federal dollars. Now, as far as South Dakota, you know, they've made their mind up. You know, I think that I don't like saying this, but in reality, the unintended consequence of what's going to result with these programming going away for public television, I think that, you know, you're under the gun now and there's not going to be anything there to fund to do that. But I think the unintended consequence will raise the awareness of the people of South Dakota that, you know, during next session, maybe there will be some feedback about what is no longer apparent. You know, and I talk about transparency in the sense that, you know, we always hear we need to be transparent. You know, with public broadcasting, for the things that you're doing regarding state government, and I don't know if anything's going to be impacted about the public meetings or the government, the committee meetings, the legislature, and all of that. That was one way, and this program and other programming that you had, that you showed transparency as to what is happening to the people of South Dakota based on public service of the other government entities, and they're going to be losing that. And so sometimes it takes that to happen before you have a turnaround to realize, oh my, did I really lose this and now I don't have it? Is there something I can do to get back? I mean, that's a far thought, but to me, this unintended consequence, people do not understand. They just understand that people are telling them that, you know, you're not getting the right information. But the transparency for state government at the state level is going to be minimized as a result of this.
Yeah.
I'd agree.
My understanding is they prioritized open government. I'm not part of the planning process, so I'm not sure exactly what that looks like. If that means you'll see no change or if you'll see certain changes or a delay, I have not been advised. I know for sure public affairs programming, that, you know, local public affairs program, like In the Moment in South Dakota Focus, are going away, which I think is also a loss. I mean, I guess
it's a huge loss. And for those of you who listen to this every week, and there are thousands of you, I know that there are, I'm going to encourage you. I am a sustaining member. I give monthly. And I would encourage you to give to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. When you think about it, in rural areas of this state, this is their programming. I mean, it plays a big part. And it's unfortunate. When you called me and told me, I was angry, upset. But now I'm going to take a different approach, and I'm going to fight and try and get the funding that we need to save these programs. And that's what needs to happen. Not only locally, but I haven't given up the fight with Congress. They're right now creating their appropriations bills.
Right.
So we still have an opportunity. And I would encourage people out there, if you don't understand what's being taken, go learn about it. And then if it's important enough to you, fight for it.